This is one of my most favorite musicians to listen to, Sonny Stitt, S-T-I-T-T, with Blues Greasy. I just love it. I just love the names that these musicians give their work, you know. This was recorded on January the 1st, 1957, for the album Personal Appearance. Stitt, who also composed the tune on both alto and tenor sax, Bobby Timmons on piano, Edgar Willis on double bass, and Kenny Dennis on drums. Stitt, who gained prominence in the bebop and hard bop eras, died in Washington, D.C. in 1982. He was 58 years old. But by then, he had recorded more than 100 albums. Now, that's a hardworking man by any stretch of the imagination. This is Lead Stories. I'm Latrice Lead. And let's get some of the formalities out of the way. I want to welcome you, if you're new, to Lead Stories, because it's a new year, so might as well do double duty here. It's the first edition of Lead Stories for 2022. So welcome, a warm welcome to you. If you are just joining us for the first time or fairly new to the program, I welcome you back, those of you who are in the groove. Good to have you back. And I'm delighted to say you'll notice some subtle changes, nothing drastic. But what I want to emphasize more this year is I want to hear more of your voice, your thoughts, your analysis, and I want to hear you getting better at it by breaking things down as you understand them. You know, radio is great for that very reason. We can't see each other, really. But what is important is to hear what you are thinking and to share what you are thinking without fear. You are strong in your belief and in your opinion, and so you should feel better and better about sharing it. Radio, after all, encourages the building of community, which is that's my whole thing. I like community. And I like to feel that when we gather together for the program, we are doing so in that spirit, building a community. I don't want you feeling, you know, it used to be uptight back in the day. I don't want you to feel self-conscious about expressing yourself. I want you to feel more and more comfortable about expressing yourself, but expressing yourself in a methodical way, getting better and better at it, more precise, so that you could be a very dangerous person to unsuspecting people who think, you're just an ordinary person. You're not. I don't think of you that way. So I have a couple of questions that we can deal with today, and I would like you to think about one of them that you would be tackling and sharing with us. So let's get started. What do you think will be our greatest challenge as a nation in this new year, and what makes you think so? I'll repeat. What do you think will be our greatest challenge as a nation in this new year? And what makes you think so? Here's another question you may want to ponder. Will Donald Trump get his comeuppance this year? Or will there be a battle royale to spring him from the clutches of the Democrats? Will Donald Trump get his comeuppance this year? Or will there be a battle royale to spring him from the clutches of the Democrats? That is assuming Democrats have clutches. Here's another question. What major national disaster should we be prepared for? And why will that disaster happen? What major national disaster should we be prepared for? And why will that disaster happen? Okay, here's another. What strong points do you think the Republicans have against the Democrats? What strong points do you think the Republicans have against the Democrats? And finally, you can choose this one. Facing the challenges we face as a nation, what is the smartest political, institutional, and civic leaders? What is the smartest thing that they can do now, right now? So you have a wide range of questions to choose from that you will answer authoritatively and put that matter, whichever question you're answering, put it to bed with your very decisive and incisive analysis. 888-874-4888. Let's get on with the program. Let's get you in line, ready to go. Don't waste a minute. We have to begin doing these kinds of analyses. The program is not, you know, the analysis program, but it is important. It is vital, in fact, that we develop an appetite for it, because we'll need it. From where I see, we will need to have an analytical mind. Jeremiah from Harlem, Happy New Year, and welcome.
Happy New Year to you, Eutrice. And I think it's fitting I'm the first caller because I'm a New Year's baby. I was born January 1st.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so I want to jump right in there just like I did on New Year's Day many years ago.
Oh.
But my answer to your questions are the same across the board, and it all starts with medical freedom. I think the medical freedom movement is the movement that we all need to be engaged in right now, and our general human rights will be subsequent to that. And I think that...
Before you go on,
yes.
Could you give us a little bit more about what you mean by medical freedom movement?
The anti-mandate movement, to begin with, saying that it's really a terrible precedent to set for the government to rush experimental drugs to the market and then suggest or, by means of coercion, pressure people into taking these drugs and saying you can't participate in society in the full sense if you have not taken experimental drugs. I mean, even if you believe in these experimental drugs, which is your prerogative, I don't understand how a person couldn't see the terrible precedent set by the government being able to declare emergency arbitrarily and then say you have to take experimental drugs as a solution and you can't go to your place of work, you can't pay for your house, you can't pay for your existence, you might not have full access to food, you know, can't go into a restaurant, no access to the culture of the city, etc. And then to target children in this is where it really gets evil. And that's where people really need to step back and say, hey, wait a second. Now we're getting into a realm of you're not even attempting to provide a medical justification. You're just saying at this point, no, let's do this. Your kids will be little pincushions. And they keep saying, well, people have taken vaccines for all these years, and we already have taken many vaccines. Well, maybe that's true. Maybe we should start questioning that. I don't understand why people think it's a great argument to say, well, we've been doing it this way up until now. We might have been doing the wrong thing. And I just don't understand.
What about the issue of the rights of the state versus the rights of the individual? You seem to be suggesting that they are equal.
I believe in basic human rights. You know, I don't give a lot of credit to the state because every major crime in history was deemed legal by the state that was perpetrating the crime at the time. And then hundreds of years later or decades later, they might make some sort of weird political apology after millions of lives have been destroyed. So, you know, that's what I've been pointing out over and over and over again, is I've witnessed what this government has done in my lifetime. In recent history, we've seen genocidal actions in Afghanistan. We've seen genocidal actions repeatedly in Iraq. We've seen genocidal actions in Libya. We see proxy wars like in Yemen. We saw the poisoning of American people in Flint. And we saw the political theater that followed that with no solution for these people who have been damaged genetically, actually, because lead poisoning can damage your genes. So, I mean, we've seen all these genocidal acts by our government, and now that same government is turning around and saying, you have to take experimental drugs. I don't trust it. And I'm amazed at people who do trust this stuff and what they're doing right now. Like the notion of sending a genetic message, an RNA message, to be able to endlessly fight this one particular respiratory ailment. Well, I don't want my genes altered. And it might sound like a great idea to Bill Gates, but it doesn't sound like a good idea to me. And I find it amazing when people also say, well, you know, like a friend of mine said, well, you know, I really believe in medical science. My mother has, you know, serious kidney condition. If it wasn't for stem cells and so on, she wouldn't be alive. Hey, I'm not opposed to medical science, but I feel great. So I'm not looking for a life-saving intervention. You know, my own mother, who's 74 years old, just caught COVID a couple weeks ago. Her husband had a case of it and was sent home, was feeling pretty lousy, but was sent home. And he took care of himself. It took him a little over a week to recover. In the process of that, my mother, who was exposed to him every day and constantly, she developed a little cough. So she tested negative in the first place, and then she went back to test again. And she tested positive. And at that point, she had a little cough, but she didn't feel weak. She didn't feel congested. And by the day after she was, quote unquote, COVID positive, she felt like $1 million. And she's unvaccinated. If she were vaccinated, people would be claiming, the vaccine saved your life. Thank God you were vaccinated. And the fact is, my unvaccinated 74-year-old mom had an ideal immune response to this pathogen. And, you know, she's not vaccinated. So I find that also really strange, this notion of a vaccine or a medical intervention that doesn't prevent you from catching or spreading the disease. It just reduces symptoms. But the whole gist of what they were saying in the first place was that 80 to 90% of the cases are asymptomatic. So if I'm asymptomatic, how do I know to give credit to your vaccine when that was the case in the first place? It's like as soon as the vaccine was available on the marketplace, being unvaccinated and getting COVID suddenly became a death sentence when we knew in the first place.
You got us off to a very strong start today.
Don't be surprised. And medical freedom for everyone, because once they take your body, you have nothing left to fight for. And if you don't have enough courage to stick up for your kids, then you don't have any courage at all. If you don't have courage for yourself, have courage for some children out there who need the example of courage. Happy New Year.
Thanks for getting us started today, Jeremiah. Thank you so much, and for your very strong and well-reasoned opinion. Thank you. Ed from Los Angeles, you're on the air.
Poverty. Poverty is one of our greatest challenges. It's going to be in 2022. And I've been food insecure at times. I had a great friend who came up and brought me some produce. But poverty is going to be one of our greatest challenges. We're already in poverty. I live in California, and there are certain cities and townships in California where every single person has a food stamp card. And even then, you can't meet your basic needs. So, and I don't believe that our Congress and our Senate are doing their jobs. I know that Kamala Harris was confronted by a reporter, and she was, he said, "Is Joe Manchin the president of the United States?" And, of course, she got sarcastic and said, "Of course he's not the president of the United States." And she, and the guy brought up the fact that, you know, people are hurting, people on fixed incomes are hurting, and she went off on some sort of tangent, didn't answer the question, of course. And so that's one of the things I think our greatest challenge is poverty. People are just not making it because the government, as usual, is paying attention to the banks and the corporations and giving them huge tax cuts. You know, when Joe Manchin talks about the deficit and wanting to give out stimulus checks to seniors, and the Republicans do the same thing and adding to the deficit, they forget, and I don't know if they forget this, but the banks get, let's see, $120 billion starting March of 2020, and then Jerome Powell lowered it to $105 billion. This is the four major banks. This is Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Citibank, and Chase. And that adds to the deficit that the Fed just prints this money and gives it to them. So it's complete hypocrisy that the Congress and the Senate would be concerned about the deficit. But it's okay if the banks get this free money that they don't need. And that's $5 trillion that's already added to the deficit since March of 2020, and it's still going on. So the hypocrisy is just amazing. And meanwhile, seniors like me, who are on fixed incomes, we're food insecure. We're starving to death because we're not making it. We, even with our food stamps, we're not making it. So, and I had to jump through fire hoops just to prove I qualified for food stamps. So I think that poverty and with the environmental challenges that we have now, I think that's one of our greatest challenges. And I don't think it's just here in the United States. I think it's all over the world. And that would dovetail with our freedoms as well. Our freedoms are being challenged. But our freedoms have been taken away, not just in this latest pandemic. They've been taken away.
You're straying. Stay on one point and see it through.
Okay. So that's my very big concern is poverty. We don't really address it. Doesn't seem to be an issue in this country.
I thank you for contributing today. Very meaningful, and it should cause us to rethink this whole thing, what you said in just a nutshell, but there's so many pieces to it that, we just can't think it is just one thing. It is vast, and it affects millions and millions of people in this country. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Here's another Ed from Queens. You're on the air.
Hey, Happy New Year, Eutrice. How are you feeling?
Oh, yes, that's right. Sorry. I forgot to wish people Happy New Year. Oh, my gosh.
It's all right. You're forgiven. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Hopefully a better 2022 than 2021, especially from my personal perspective. Two of the questions I'd like to tackle is, number one, what can the Republicans use? What would be an effective point against the Democratic Party? I mean, for me, it's obvious. Inaction and inability to lead. Everything that the Biden campaign and the Democratic Party put forward, they reneged on. The Fight for 15, Build Back Better, the Kyoto Protocols for climate, for environmental activism. they reneged on all of the things that they ran on, that the promises that were made. They reneged, if not immediately, within the first 100 days. And Joe Biden is an ineffectual leader. He's an afterthought. He doesn't even incorporate his vice presidential running mate or nominee, Kamala Harris, into the decision-making process whatsoever. So they're ineffectual leaders. And the Republican Party are going to have a field day with that, which brings me to my number two point, and which is one of the primary reasons why I'm really working on a plan to get out of this country within the next 5 years. Donald Trump will be president again. We are not going to do anything to this man. This man is a criminal. This man fomented a revolution. And just on that, besides his criminal past, besides his nefarious activities, he's still being considered a power broker in the Republican Party. My opinion, he is the titular head of the Republican Party. He is the factual head of the Republican Party.
But he did. He went down to Mar-a-Lago and established what I did. I did that program a while ago called a parallel presidency. That's what he established.
Yes. And they qualify him by not holding him accountable for his criminal activity. This man fomented a revolution. He fomented an insurrection. He promoted it. And he allowed it to happen. He did not use his executive power to even quell it. And more of this comes out, but there's no action against him. And as long as he's allowed to make, people forget, 75 million people voted for this man. And Biden won on a humble. And if the same people that voted for the Biden Kamala Harris ticket don't come out again, due to disappointment and disaffection with the Democratic Party, Lord help us.
I know things are serious when you start invoking the name of the Lord to help us solve a problem. I know we have a problem now. Let me ask, is it unusual, really, for Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, the president, to come under heavy criticism, or do you just feel that they deserve more criticism than what you would normally attribute to a current president who is doing the same kind of job that they're doing?
Well, personally, they should be held more accountable because of how they won the candidacy and the promises that they made. And for me, the immediate giving up on those promises, without even using the power of the bully pulpit, without even using the pen, the executive order pen, just immediately, we can't have that. Well, we can't do this. Well, we can't have that. My clarion call has always been, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Whether you believe it's planned, whether you believe it's vaccines, whatever you believe, people are dying and people are being hospitalized. And not one of these Democratic leaders, not any political leader, has called for free health care.
What do you mean by how they won? Could you explain that phrase a bit?
They won on a humble. They weren't a positive choice, in my opinion. They were, hey, we can't elect Trump. We got to do this. Whatever they did, that was the bulwark of their campaign. You know, they threw in a little spice here, a little spice there, but the bulwark of their campaign, we can't allow Trump to have another term. And that was a campaign based on a negative. It wasn't a campaign based on a positive. And campaigns should be based on positive. Parties should have platforms. Candidates should have ideas. Candidates should have a point of view and order that promote the welfare of the public. Not vote for me in spite of this person, vote for me because of this. And that's what they didn't have.
I want to ask you this question, though, about your prediction that Donald Trump will be president again. How sure are you of that?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, unless some paradigm shift happens in the Democratic Party or in the populace, I fear that this man, and I don't want to be right, believe me, but I fear that this man will be the president again. I desperately fear. And what comes with him, because he's not that bad, but what travels with this man, the hatred, the vitriol, the racism, the fascism, that's what travels with him, and that's what scares me.
Thanks, Ed. Thank you for your contribution today. Right about now, we'll take a break and come back to your analysis or analyses, depending on how many topics you're going after today. But we'll be talking again right after this break. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're starting off the new year, 2022, taking a look at what's ahead of us, or what could be ahead of us, and how do we prepare for it, if such a thing were even possible. 888-874-4888 is a number to call. What are you thinking about what's happening in the country and the questions that I laid out for you to consider? So let me repeat them in case you forgot some of them already. All right. What do you think will be our greatest challenge as a nation in this new year? What makes you think so? Will Donald Trump get his comeuppance this year, or will there be a battle royal to spring him from the clutches of the Democrats? What major national disaster should we be prepared for, and why will it happen? The disaster, not the preparation. What strong points do you think the Republicans have against the Democrats? And finally, facing the challenges we face as a nation, what is the smartest thing that political, institutional, and civic leaders can do now? Take your pick and call in at 888-874-4888 and let's hear what you're thinking. We're going to be doing a lot of talking to each other in this new year, because I have discovered, and it's nothing really surprising, that there is so much knowledge, so much information buried in people's heads, and they don't get to share it, and they don't get to let us understand what they're thinking, to teach us a thing or two. And I would like very much in this new year to emphasize the natural brilliance you have and to encourage it to come out and share it and encourage other people to think about what you are presenting as well. Don't be shy about it. You know, it's not going to get you anywhere. It's important that you take what you are thinking seriously, so that in turn we can. 888-874-4888. As the election approaches, and of course the year has ended, and we will have the big focus, Donald Trump is having a ball. He loves this kind of stuff. Even if it's bad, it's good, because people are talking about him and fussing about him and arguing about him, which means he returns to the center, the focal point of people's attention. We got to find a way to stop that. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Truth, how's it going?
Okay, Henry. Happy New Year to you.
happy new year to you, everybody in the PRN and Lead Stories listeners. I want to take the question about the disasters that could possibly happen for 2022. Two disasters that I'm thinking about, and I hope it doesn't happen, but, you know, looking at some of the stories that have happened in the last year kind of makes me think that this is impending. So my first one is, I believe that there is going to be record flooding in a major coastal city or major coastal cities. And I'm talking about flooding like on the Katrina level that we saw in 2005. And I want to preference why, because I was looking at an article and they were talking about one of the biggest it's a real huge glacier that scientists have saw that have like melted into the ocean, and they're predicting that this is going to rise the level of the ocean at least by 10 feet. So that's pretty huge when you're talking about the average levels going up by 10 feet. I'm not sure if it's going to happen this year, but I got a feeling that something is going to significantly happen where one of the coastal cities, maybe on the Atlantic, maybe on the Pacific, is going to experience some record flooding from a storm, from a hurricane, you know, whatever. But we're going to see something like that on a major coastal city. The second disaster that I see is more technology, something I'm a little experienced in. I got a feeling that there's going to be a security breach, a major hacking incident that's going to compromise either information, a lot of people's information is going to get out on the dark web, or there could possibly be, you know, significant stuff that, you know, in regards to some of the stuff that we depend on with technology, like power, energy, you know, that type of thing. I got a feeling that's going to happen because the number of cyber attacks have gone up significantly over the last year. And I feel like there's going to be a major incident that's going to happen this year where something's going to get hacked. And it's going to cause a lot of significant damage in regards to, like I said, releasing personal information or, you know, whatever. So that's my two predictions on what possibly might happen in 2022.
So, okay, you identified two things that you think will happen, two major disasters. What should be done now, immediately?
Well, if I was reading correctly, as some of the recommendations of the ecological scientists on my first disaster, they were saying, you know, see if you can move away from a coastal city because, you know, like I said, the shorelines are going to get higher and higher. But as far as the cyber attacks, just basic caution about, you know, what you put out there on the internet as far as your security, as far as your information, because, you know, nowadays it's getting easier to hack, you know, information now or obtain information, not hacking, but obtaining information now. Just be mindful of what you put out there, especially, you know, on social media. You know, that's a very, very slippery slope with social media, because you're basically kind of telling on yourself in a sense when you're posting stuff on social media and purchasing stuff. Also, to have a backup plan in regards to, you know, just in case if your power goes out, you know, have a generator so, you know, you could be able to survive whatever power outages that that you have. Obviously, last year we saw what happened in Texas, where their grid went out and people, you know, lost power for a significant amount of time. So,
but it didn't affect Ted Cruz because he went to Mexico.
Of course, it didn't affect him.
He knew where to go.
Yeah, but, you know, we don't have Ted Cruz money, so.
Oh, that's true, too. So those are the two things you see as being very real and very possible in this coming year, in this year, I should say.
Yes. I hope I'm wrong, but yes.
Yes, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention, Brother Henry. Thank you, from Chicago. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, all.
Good afternoon.
A lot of good questions. I think I'll take a stab at the first part. And as I see it, it's going to get worse. I mean, the fact that we live in a plutocracy and we do not have any parties that represent the people. We have just one party that's a duopoly. And the major problem that we have is over the period of years, the ability to get information, that is, the people's ability to get information, whether it's electronic or written, has been going down because we've had the ability of those who rule to censor and keep people from getting the information they need to make good decisions. For example, certain things that the rulers are interested in, they don't want you to know about. All they want you to know about is things, for example, about, you know, taking a vaccine. They don't want you to know about any alternative treatment, so they censor these things. So that is one of the biggest challenges that we ought to look at. Now, your part where you ask about what to do with it, we have to have more independent media. We need more radio stations like PRN.FM. We need more independent newspapers like the one you used to run. And we need, that's right, that's what we need, because the mass media, and we know that, for example, that they control most of the newspapers in the country. Just a handful of publishers control most of the newspapers, and the electronic media also. So they've got a lock on that, and they are doing a good job of getting a lock on the minds of people and keeping them. I don't want to be offensive, but I think ignorant about what is really going on. So we need more things that are independent, and we ought to support those things so we get information that is accurate rather than just the information from the plutocrats. Now, I have taken what's in my hands, and in my case, I used to be a seven-day subscriber to the New York Times in print edition. And I said to myself, why am I supporting this lying newspaper? And I just dropped my subscription. So people ought to think about, in the case where they subscribe to certain newspapers, to cut these lying people loose. And that's what you have to do. And support places that will give you some information and get you to the point where you can make decisions on the basis of other than what the plutocrats who run practically 90-something percent of the information you get that is out there. I'm very sorry because I come in contact with many people who are quote-unquote educated, and I can't believe how they are brainwashed with the lies that are in the corporate media, electronic and printed. So that's where I stand.
All right. Well, thank you. You're standing in a good place. Thank you so much, Brother David, for your contribution today. Well, what are you thinking in this new year? I gave you some questions to ponder, what your position might be on any of them. And let us know what you are thinking. What is on your mind as this new year dawns upon us? What should we be thinking so that we would know what we're doing or we can plan what we're doing? Because I tell you, what I see coming down the pike, it means we have to be ready for a fight, a continuing fight in this year. We can't believe that, well, things will be all right. Everything will work out and everything will be okay. Absolutely not. That's the wrong stance to take. This year, we have too many things, as my father used to say, a curious concatenation of things. And we want to get ahead of it, but we have to understand it first. And that's what we're trying to encourage a discussion about today. There are more questions, of course. You can pick some of those that have not yet been addressed and decide that you would follow through and analyze them. Why are we doing this? I explained it earlier that media should be more than just you turn a knob and you get something coming at you or to you. But it has its own agenda, it has its own topic, it has its own bit of business to do while on the air, and that's what media is all about too. But what are you thinking? That is what intrigues me. It has always intrigued me. What are you thinking? And why are you thinking whatever it is you're thinking? I would like to know. And the reason is that so many of us from early on were locked out of that very process. Nobody wants to know what you think. They just want to be able to predict what you will do, you know, how you will vote, what measures you will vote for, how they can manipulate your thinking. But it is important, it's vitally important, because your brain is your self-defense. What you're thinking would more than likely be what you would end up doing as well. And in the world of politics, that makes you a very dangerous person. You're thinking for yourself? What? What kind of craziness is that? We have it all laid out for you. We can tell you what will happen. We can give you chapter and verse. But it is time to take charge of your own brain and encourage yourself to pay attention to your organic thinking. It's very important. Now, that's an organic element that few people are encouraged to take, pay attention to. Organic thinking. Muhammad from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Trace.
Good afternoon.
hope all is going well with you. From my perspective, what I see is a coming depression. We're already in a recession, and what really concerns me is so many people without jobs, so many people that cannot pay their rent, and they keep sudden, you know, the dates when they put it back and put it back where they don't have to pay. But at some point, these people not going to be able to pay their rents. And when you look at the price of food and everything, the cost of everything is going up. And salaries are not going up at the same rate that the inflation is going up. So, you know, when you look at Europe, this so-called pandemic, this has just caused problems all over the world. You look at, say, Australia, you look at Austria and see what's going over there, and France and Germany. People are rebellion, but here they haven't done so yet. But I think when it come down, when the depression come and people can't eat, I think we're going to have some serious problems. So I think as a people, what we need to do is organize and unite and try to help each other. Myself, I'm doing okay, you know, financially and being able to eat and things. But my concern is some of the people around me can't do that, you know. And I just recently moved from one place to another, purchased some property. And I think, you know, from the charity organizations, I've had about 30 different requests for money, like, you know, the Lakota family in South Dakota, the food banks, about 30 of them. And I said, well, let me give all of them about $5. I have a little more than what I need. And my nature just tell me if I have a little more than I need, that means for me to try to share. So I see a depression coming. We're already in a recession. I mean, the small businesses have gone under, and the people can't really do for themselves. And this really concerns me. It saddens me because I think I'm a human guy. You know, I don't look at so much class or color or what they call race, which is a false construct. It's just our fellow human beings, you know. And I say this is going to sound crazy, right? I hear the cats out there sometime, and just, you know, I can hear a little distress in there, you know, the sounds they make. And that just bothered me a little bit also. It just makes me a little sad because it shows there's some suffering. And I just think we're going to have a lot of that. And then I'm going to just jump to politics. I think we're going to have some problems because we have a divided country right now. And that concerned me also. And, you know, those people that follow Trump, they're taking guns. And I heard someone said it. They think on January 6th when they had the sedition, they said, we think that's something. They said, just wait till the next time. So we're a country divided right now. And I think you're going to really, really see a problem when people can't eat anymore. We don't really have a problem. So I'm trying to do my best to help out as much as I can and try to, you know, organize and unite our people and help each other because we're going to really need that in the future. I'll say one more last thing and I'll leave it alone. With these low interest rates, what that do is those of us have a little savings, we can't earn any money on our savings. And when the interest rates go low like that, the business people, they can borrow for very little. Then they take that money and invest it in the stock market and make that go up. But those of us who have a little savings, we can't earn nothing on our savings. And then inflation, take that away. Thank you very much for hearing me. I really appreciate it.
I thank you very much for calling in and contributing. You put quite a few things on the table for us to consider. Thank you very much, Muhammad, for calling today. Okay, Patricia from New York, you're on the air. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Utrice, and Happy New Year to the PRN family. I hope this indeed will be a joyous and healthy New Year for everyone.
Thank you.
I want to support Ed's statement. As you know, I have always maintained that Trump will absolutely be reelected, and I'll tell you why. Multiple reasons. Number one, there is such disaffection with Joe Biden. If you look at his position on this vaccine mandate, I can tell you that I have friends here in New York who are absolutely angry. Many of them voted for Curtis Sliwa in the mayoral election in New York this year, specifically because of that. friends of mine are considering leaving New York. And I mean, these are people who are civil servants, who are not of retirement age, but right now all they want to do is go to a state where they will have the opportunity to choose what goes in their body. That's number one. Number two, you know, he has not been able to capture the under 50 black and brown population, our children. But more than that, he's having trouble hanging on to his traditional base, which at this particular point are dwindling black and brown seniors. He's not going to be able to hold on to them. And without holding on to them, he doesn't have a wing and a prayer. He has not come through on any of his campaign promises. If you even look at taxing the rich to get money for schools, to get money for health care, even Saudi Arabia, he said he was going to make Saudi Arabia pay for the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. I mean, nothing, absolutely nothing that he promised us has he fulfilled. He's going to try and sell this infrastructure bill as a significant accomplishment on his part, but I think people are beginning to recognize that this infrastructure bill only benefited corporations who are going to get tons and tons of that infrastructure money, and very few black and brown people are going to be hired from that. So there's not, you know, his position is that black and brown people who put him in office should organize their way out of this catastrophe, which is him and Kamala Harris. It's not going to happen. He can't hold on to people like me. He never had people under 50. He doesn't stand a wing and a prayer.
Wow. So how do you really feel, Patricia?
I keep telling you, I've tried to figure out a place where I can run to, but you want to know something? This is a worldwide phenomenon. There's no place for us to hide. That's the problem. There's no place, well, there's only one place for us to hide, but most of us can't get there.
I tell you. So let me ask you, you're in a dilemma right now, or are you basically saying, if we have to take the best of the worst to get over the hump, what are you going to do?
When you say the best of the worst, are you saying if I have to have a choice between Trump and Biden, what am I going to do? Is that the question?
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to do exactly what I did the last time, which was vote for a candidate that close represents my position. And if that ends up that Trump is elected, then so be it. I think we're at a point now where we are going to have to experience some pain, and we're going to have to engage in some severe introspection as to how we approach electoral politics and what is our responsibility to electoral politics, and how do we navigate that space.
Are you satisfied with the signals that you're getting from traditional areas that we get traditional hints from and how to deal with a president?
If you're talking about the traditional black elected intelligentsia, they don't know
Yes.
any other way to operate. So I don't even pay them any attention. I don't listen to them. What I do know is that when you, even within the black elected, I'm beginning to hear a fracture, when you hear them talk about who are the correct black elected officials to follow, it's usually the Maxine Waters crowd and the Congressional Black Caucus, say, as opposed to the progressive Democrats. So even amongst them, when they're talking about who are the quote unquote correct Democrats to follow, I'm talking about black elected, elected of colors. It's the traditional black vanguard as opposed to the progressive black. And as a matter of fact, those who are up for re-election, like Ocasio-Cortez, There's no question in my mind that Nancy Pelosi is going to try and primary her. And I think the responsibility for us at that point is to make sure that she has the support of the people.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much. That brings us to the end of our program today, but not the end of the program. We continue this discussion because it has to be had. We have to be open and clear and definitive about what we're thinking, because we are in a very precarious time in our country. And I'm so delighted with your analysis today, or your analyses today, because many of you put your fingers right on the problem, and you had solutions as well that should be considered. Thank you so much for being so forthcoming and contributing so meaningfully. We'll talk again tomorrow. Bye-bye.